Chapter 62. The Miss Crumptons, or to quote the authority of the inscription on the garden gate of Minerva House, Hammersmith, the Mrs. Crumpton, apostrophe were two unusually tall, particularly thin, and exceedingly skinny personages. Very upright, and very yellow. Miss Amelia Crumpton owned 238, and Miss Maria Crumpton admitted she was 40. An admission which was rendered perfectly unnecessary by the self-evident fact of her being at least 50. They dressed in the most interesting manner like twins, and looked as happy and comfortable as a couple of marigolds run to seed. They were very precise, had the strictest possible ideas of propriety, wore false hair, and always smelt very strongly of lavender. Minerva House, conducted under the auspices of the two sisters, was a finishing establishment for young ladies, apostrophe where some 20 girls of the ages of from 13 to 19 inclusive, acquired a smattering of everything, and a knowledge of nothing, instruction in French and Italian, dancing lessons twice a week, and other necessaries of life. The house was a white one, a little removed from the roadside, with close palings in front. The bedroom windows were always left partly open, to afford a bird's-eye view of numerous little bedsteads with very white dimity furniture, and thereby impress the passer-by with a due sense of the luxuries of the establishment. And there was a front parlor hung round with highly varnished maps which nobody ever looked at, and filled with books which no one ever read, appropriated exclusively to the reception of parents, who, whenever they called, could not fail to be struck with the very deep appearance of the place. Amelia, my dear, apostrophe said Miss Maria Crumpton, entering the schoolroom one morning, with her false hair in papers. As she occasionally did, in order to impress the young ladies with a conviction of its reality. Amelia, my dear, here is a most gratifying note I have just received. You needn't mind reading it aloud. Apostrophe, Miss Amelia, thus advised, proceeded to read the following note with an air of great triumph. Cornelius Brooke Dingwall Esquire. M.P. presents his compliments to Miss Crumpton, and will feel much obliged by Miss Crumpton's calling on him, if she conveniently can, tomorrow morning at 1 o'clock, as Cornelius Brooke Dingwall Esquire. M.P. is anxious to see Miss Crumpton on the subject of placing Miss Brooke Dingwall under her charge. Adelphi. Monday morning. Apostrophe, a member of Parliament's daughter. Apostrophe, apostrophe, ejaculated Amelia, in an ecstatic tone. A member of Parliament's daughter. Apostrophe, apostrophe, repeated Miss Maria, with a smile of delight, which, of course, elicited a concurrent titter of pleasure from all the young ladies. It's exceedingly delightful. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Miss Amelia, whereupon all the young ladies murmured their admiration again. Courtiers are but schoolboys, and court ladies schoolgirls. So important an announcement at once superseded the business of the day. A holiday was declared, in commemoration of the great event. The Miss Crumptons retired to their private apartment to talk it over. The smaller girls discussed the probable manners and customs of the daughter of a member of Parliament. And the young ladies verging on 18 wondered, whether she was engaged, whether she was pretty, whether she wore much bustle, and many other weathers of equal importance. The two Miss Crumptons proceeded to the Adelphi at the appointed time next day, dressed, of course, in their best style, and looking as amiable as they possibly could, which, by the by, is not saying much for them. Having sent in their cards, through the medium of a red-hot-looking footman in bright livery, they were ushered into the august presence of the profound Dingwall. Cornelius Brooke Dingwall Esquire. M.P. was very haughty, solemn, and portentous. He had, naturally, a somewhat spasmodic expression of countenance, which was not rendered the less remarkable by his wearing an extremely stiff cravat. He was wonderfully proud of the MP attached to his name, and never lost an opportunity of reminding people of his dignity. He had a great idea of his own abilities, which must have been a great comfort to him, as no one else had. And in diplomacy, on a small scale, in his own family arrangements, he considered himself unrivaled. He was a county magistrate, and discharged the duties of his station with all due justice and impartiality, frequently committing poachers, and occasionally committing himself. Miss Brooke Dingwall was one of that numerous class of young ladies, who, like adverbs, may be known by their answering to a commonplace question, and doing nothing else. On the present occasion, this talented individual was seated in a small library at a table covered with papers, doing nothing but trying to look busy, playing at shop. Acts of Parliament, and letters directed to Cornelius Brooke Dingwall Esquire. M.P. were ostentatiously scattered over the table, at a little distance from which Mrs. Brooke Dingwall was seated at work. One of those public nuisances, a spoiled child, was playing about the room, dressed after the most approved fashion in a blue tunic with a black belt a quarter of a yard wide, fastened with an immense buckle looking like a robber in a melodrama, seen through a diminishing glass. After a little pleasantry from the sweet child, who amused himself by running away with Miss Maria Crumpton's chair as fast as it was placed for her, the visitors were seated, and Cornelius Brooke Dingwall Esquire opened the conversation. He had sent for Miss Crumpton, he said, in consequence of the high character he had received of her establishment from his friend, Sir Alfred Muggs. Miss Crumpton murmured her acknowledgments to him, Muggs, and Cornelius proceeded. One of my principal reasons, Miss Crumpton, for parting with my daughter, is that she has lately acquired some sentimental ideas, which it is most desirable to eradicate from her young mind. Here the little innocent before noticed, fell out of an armchair with an awful crash. Naughty boy! Said his mama, who appeared more surprised at his taking the liberty of falling down than at anything else. I'll ring the bell for James to take him away. Pray don't check him, my love, said the diplomatist, as soon as he could make himself heard amidst the unearthly howling consequent upon the threat and the tumble. It all arises from his great flow of spirits. This last explanation was addressed to Miss Crumpton. Certainly, sir, replied the antique Maria. Not exactly seeing, however, the connection between a flow of animal spirits and a fall from an armchair. Silence was restored, and the MP resumed. Now, I know nothing so likely to affect this object, Miss Crumpton, as her mixing constantly in the society of girls of her own age, and as I know that in your establishment she will meet such as are not likely to contaminate her young mind, I propose to send her to you. The youngest Miss Crumpton expressed the acknowledgments of the establishment generally. Maria was rendered speechless by bodily pain. The dear little fellow, having recovered his animal spirits, was standing upon her most tender foot, by way of getting his face, which looked like a capital O in a red-lettered playbill, on the level with the writing table. Of course, Lavinia will be a parlor boarder, continued the enviable father, and on one point I wish my directions to be strictly observed. The fact is, that some ridiculous love affair, with a person much her inferior in life, has been the cause of her present state of mind. Knowing that, of course, under your care, she can have no opportunity of meeting this person, I do not object to indeed, I should rather prefer her mixing with such society as you see yourself. This important statement was again interrupted by the high-spirited little creature, in the excess of his joyousness breaking a pane of glass, and nearly precipitating himself into an adjacent area. James was rung for. Considerable confusion and screaming succeeded. Two little blue legs were seen to kick violently in the air as the man left the room, and the child was gone. Mr. Brooke Dingwall would like Miss Brooke Dingwall to learn everything, said Mrs. Brooke Dingwall, who hardly ever said anything at all. Certainly, apostrophe said both the Miss Crumptons together. And as I trust the plan I have devised will be effectual in weaning my daughter from this absurd idea, Miss Crumpton, apostrophe continued the legislator, I hope you will have the goodness to comply, in all respects, with any request I may forward to you. Apostrophe, the promise was of course made. And after a lengthened discussion, conducted on behalf of the Dingwalls with the most becoming diplomatic gravity, and on that of the Crumptons with profound respect, it was finally arranged that Miss Lavinia should be forwarded to Hammersmith on the next day but one, on which occasion the half-yearly ball given at the establishment was to take place. It might divert the dear girl's mind. This, by the way, was another bit of diplomacy. Miss Lavinia was introduced to her future governess, and both the Miss Crumptons pronounced her a most charming girl, apostrophe an opinion which, by a singular coincidence, they always entertained of any new pupil. Courtesies were exchanged, acknowledgments expressed, condescension exhibited, and the interview terminated. Preparations, to make use of theatrical phraseology, on a scale of magnitude never before attempted, apostrophe were incessantly made at Minerva House, to give every effect to the forthcoming ball. The largest room in the house was pleasingly ornamented with blue calico roses, plaid tulips, and other equally natural-looking artificial flowers, the work of the young ladies themselves. The carpet was taken up, the folding doors were taken down, the furniture was taken out, and rout seats were taken in. The linen drapers of Hammersmith were astounded at the sudden demand for blue sarsenet ribbon, and long white gloves. Dozens of geraniums were purchased for bouquets, and a harp and two violins were, bespoke from town, in addition to the grand piano already on the premises. The young ladies who were selected to show off on the occasion, and do credit to the establishment, practiced incessantly, much to their own satisfaction, and greatly to the annoyance of the lame old gentleman over the way, and a constant correspondence was kept up between the Mrs. Crumpton and the Hammersmith pastry cook. The evening came. And then there was such a lacing of stays, and tying of sandals, and dressing of hair, as never can take place with a proper degree of bustle out of a boarding school. The smaller girls managed to be in everybody's way, and were pushed about accordingly, and the elder ones dressed, and tied, and flattered, and envied one another, as earnestly and sincerely, as if they had actually come out. How do I look, dear? Apostrophe apostrophe inquired Miss Emily Smithers, the belle of the house, of Miss Caroline Wilson, who was her bosom friend, because she was the ugliest girl in Hammersmith, or out of it. Oh, charming, dear. How do I? Apostrophe, delightful, you never looked so handsome, apostrophe returned the belle, adjusting her own dress, and not bestowing a glance on her poor companion. I hope young Hilton will come early, apostrophe said another young lady to Miss Somebody Else, in a fever of expectation. I'm sure he'd be highly flattered, if he knew it, apostrophe returned the other, who was practicing lead. Oh, he's so handsome, apostrophe said the first. Such a charming person, apostrophe apostrophe added a second. Such a distinct air, apostrophe apostrophe said a third. Oh, what do you think? Apostrophe apostrophe said another girl, running into the room. Miss Crumpton says her cousin's coming. Apostrophe, what? Theodosius Butler? Apostrophe said everybody in raptures. Is he handsome? Apostrophe apostrophe inquired a novice. No, not particularly handsome, apostrophe was the general reply. But, oh, so clever. Apostrophe apostrophe, Mr. Theodosius Butler was one of those immortal geniuses who are to be met with in almost every circle. They have, usually, very deep, monotonous voices. They always persuade themselves that they are wonderful persons, and that they ought to be very miserable, though they don't precisely know why. They are very conceited, and usually possess half an idea, But, with enthusiastic young ladies, and silly young gentlemen, they are very wonderful persons. The individual in question, Mr. Theodosius, had written a pamphlet containing some very weighty considerations on the expediency of doing something or other, and as every sentence contained a good many words of four syllables, his admirers took it for granted that he meant a good deal. Perhaps that's he, apostrophe exclaimed several young ladies, as the first pull of the evening threatened destruction to the bell of the gate. An awful pause ensued. Some boxes arrived and a young lady, Miss Brooke Dingwall, in full ball costume, with an immense gold chain round her neck, and her dress looped up with a single rose, an ivory fan in her hand, and a most interesting expression of despair in her face. The Miss Crumptons inquired after the family, with the most excruciating anxiety, and Miss Brooke Dingwall was formally introduced to her future companions. The Miss Crumptons conversed with the young ladies in the most mellifluous tones, in order that Miss Brooke Dingwall might be properly impressed with their amiable treatment. Another pull at the bell. Mr. Datson, the writing master, and his wife. The wife in green silk, with shoes and cap trimmings to correspond. The writing master in a white waistcoat, black knee shorts, and ditto silk stockings, displaying a leg large enough for two writing masters. The young ladies whispered one another, and the writing master and his wife flattered the Miss Crumptons, who were dressed in amber, with long sashes, like dolls. Repeated pulls at the bell, and arrivals too numerous to particularize. Papas and mamas, and aunts and uncles, the owners and guardians of the different pupils, the singing master, Signor Lipskini, in a black wig, the pianoforte player and the violins, the harp, in a state of intoxication, and some 20 young men, who stood near the door, and talked to one another, occasionally bursting into a giggle. A general hum of conversation. Coffee handed round, and plentifully partaken of by fat mamas, who looked like the stout people who come on in pantomimes for the soul. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.